Hello and welcome back to Inside Total Film, the weekly podcast from the Smarter Movie Magazine. I'm Jane Crowther, Editor-in-Chief of Total Film, and today I'm joined by our reviews editor, Matthew Leyland.
Hello.
And our editor-at-large, Jamie Graham.
Hello.
Hello, Jamie. You Hello, sound like you're down Jane. A well.
Well, yes, I live half my life down a well, you could say.
Yes.
What about the other half, dare we ask?
The other half's in front of a TV, Matthew. I need to move the TV down the well and then I can just spend all my time
there. Oh, the dream.
Yes. Okay, so this week, wells aside, the game is afoot with Enola Holmes. We'll also be looking at Monsoon, Miss Juneteenth and the Rocky franchise. Plus, we've got a very special guest reviewer for 23 Walks. Okay, so TIFF has finished this week, and we're now looking forward to London Film Festival. There's some very interesting films being added to the roster. What are you excited about seeing at London Film Festival, boys?
Well, the new Pixar, Soul, very much looking forward to that.
Yeah, that's going to be good.
Yeah, especially with all the rumours that it might be going to Disney Plus. So, I mean, this could be a chance to see it on the big screen. It might be a bit of a shame, really, if it debuts on the small screen, understandably, given the current circumstances. But it would be nice to see that one on a big screen because it looks very promising. It looks like a true Pixar original. So.
Yes, probably make you blub, won't it? And what about you, Jamie?
Probably the film I'm most looking forward to at the London Film Festival is a horror movie called Relic, which is a directorial debut by a Australian-Japanese director. It stars Emily Mortimer, and it's getting absolutely rave reviews. You know, it's played a couple of festivals, and the buzz is really strong that people are saying it's this year's Hereditary, this year's The Babadook, sort of one of those family horrors about grief and trauma and, you know, very sort of personal stuff, and then the supernatural comes in on top of that. So I'm really looking forward to that.
I'm looking forward to the new Steve McQueen that's just been announced, being added to the roster. It opened, I think, the New York Film Festival and got rave reviews. It's called Lover's Rock, and it's quite saucy. So I'm looking forward to that for all of
it's saucy as shame. Shame was
I didn't find
saucy.
I didn't find shame saucy. I found that just quite grubby.
I found Shane grubby because it was very much like a sex addict, wasn't it? Yeah. So it was just him gurning a lot and just like he had to be in it, if you know what I mean. It was just like, pretty intense.
Well, let's move on to something else that we can all watch now before London Film Festival starts. It's time to follow the clues with this.
A week ago, I awoke.
Mother?
To find that my mother was missing and she did not return.
I'm presently on the way to collect my brothers, Mycroft and Sherlock.
Yes, Sherlock Holmes. The famous detective, my genius brother. He will have all the answers.
Enola.
Where's your hat and your gloves?
Well, I have a hat. Just makes my head itch. And I have no gloves.
My God.
That is Enola Holmes, the younger sister of Sherlock Holmes and Mycroft. Jamie, where do we find this sister? And why is this different from the Sherlocks that have gone before?
Well, it's different because it's focused, like you just said, on Enola. We got Sherlock played by Henry Cavill and Mycroft played by Sam Claflin. And the younger sister, she's 16 years old, played by Millie Bobby Brown, who we all know from Stranger Things. And again, it's set in Victorian England. And at the start, we learn that her father's dead. Her two older brothers haven't seen her for years. They've got no real interest in her. She's been raised by her mum, played by Helena Bonham Carter. And she's a very sort of independent, spirited young woman. She's been homeschooled. She's read every single book in the library. Her mum's taught her all sorts of martial arts, you know, so she kind of gets out there and does her thing in a society that is very closed. You know, it's a patriarchy. So anyway, the story is on her 16th birthday, her mum, who's like the love of her life, disappears. And she decides that she's going to take a sort of clue from her older brother Sherlock and become a bit of a detective and try and find her mum. So her mum is really into codes and ciphers and stuff like that. So she's convinced her mum would have left a secret message as to where she is. So she starts interpreting all these different clues she's finding. And as she's on the sort of hunt of this mystery, she bumps into a young sort of teenage lord called Lord Tewkesbury, played by Lewis Partridge, who himself is on the run for various reasons I won't go into because we want to leave a bit of mystery. But he's running away from his home and she bumps into him. There's a little bit of a kind of love story there as well. And is that a different mystery or does that sort of tie into the mystery of her mum? You know, I won't say too much, but like you said, Jane, the game is afoot and off she goes on this wonderful mystery.
it's in the spirit very much of the sort of Guy Ritchie Holmes, in as much as it belts along and it's very sort of tongue-in-cheek and fast and clever. Did you like it?
I liked it. I mean, I didn't love it, but I liked it. I think it's obviously designed to start a franchise, and I would, you know, it ends on such a way it's like ready for the next one. And I would really like to see a franchise. I really liked Millie Bobby Brown as Enola. It's directed by Harry Bradbeer, who did Fleabag, and as you may expect,
from that,
Enola Holmes does a lot of straight to camera talking and winking and little gestures, and that kind of thing can be really annoying. I think it's done too much. Too many films use that technique, but Bobby Brown does it with such kind of gusto, and she's got so much charisma that I really enjoyed it. And I think, you know, she's going to be a star. She's a very talented actress, and I enjoyed going on this journey with her, even though it moves along at a fair old clip, and even though there's action scenes and there's lots of things to sort of get you excited and get the pulse racing. It felt very old-fashioned in a way to me, that the action is quite contained and not too big. You know, it's kind of just old-fashioned action in the sense that, you know, it could almost be from the 1980s. Well, even before that. I mean, it reminded me of stuff like Railway Children. It's just got this lovely...
I mean, it even has people jumping off a train, you know, like...
It has. But it's just got a lovely family-friendly vibe to it. And I really got into it. I enjoyed it, and I would like to see a franchise.
What about you, Matthew?
Yeah, I wasn't super keen on it. I certainly liked it a lot more than the Guy Ritchie Sherlock Holmes films, because I never got on with those. I found those a bit charmless and obnoxious. So I thought, I mean, this is a lot more pleasant. While it felt it did kind of move along at a clip, I never felt too involved really in the mystery and the plot. It felt very episodic to me, kind of stopping to introduce new characters and then and not really kind of building up that momentum that I really was looking forward to. But I thought she was very good, Millie Bobby Brown. I enjoyed Sam Claflin, and he's quite dastardly as a Mycroft. I mean, he seems like even more of a villain than Moriarty in this film. He really he has this great moustache that he all but twiddles in most scenes. And I enjoyed the other actors like Fiona Shaw and Francis Delator, who have various key roles to play in it. But I think overall, I just did find it a little bit too cosy, a bit underpowered, to be honest.
I sort of agree with both of you. Millie Bobby Brown can hold this role. You know, you have to believe in her, because it centres entirely on her, and it's on her shoulders to carry this entire film. And she is, you know, depending on your sort of opinion, a precocious brat or a clever girl. But the thing I liked about it, and with a script by Jack Thorne, is the fact that it's really moving on this idea of colourblind casting that was sort of introduced with David Copperfield. Yeah. And also, it is incredibly feminist. And I don't say that in a sort of, it's off-putting. It's just really lovely to see a film that you could show to a, you know, your little girl and not have to say, oh, you know, women don't have to do that. You know, like, it's all done for you without being heavy-handed, very light touch. And just showing that we all choose our own futures, which is one of the big messages of this film. We all can be who we want to be, whether you're a man or a woman. And, you know, Helena Bonham Carter, I just enjoyed seeing her play a role like this, because I feel like it's sort of close to probably who she is as well. And Fiona Shaw, I mean, God, Fiona Shaw's just great, isn't she? She's great in everything. And she plays this ridiculous headmistress who is the total antithesis to, you know, Helena Bonham Carter's sort of liberal, freewheeling feminist mother.
I like that section in the girls' school. I thought that was the strongest part for me. That felt a bit different.
The girls' school, I mean, it all ties into the idea of feminism, that the two Holmes brothers... Mm. When the mum disappears, the only thing they can think to do with Enola is, oh, we'll send her off to finishing
school.
You know, ship her off. Yeah. She's got to become a proper young lady. Look at the way she dresses. It's not right. She has to go and learn some manners and get ready to be a young lady in society and find the right man and all of that nonsense. So they ship her off. And of course, she's having none of it. And it's really clever the way it does that. And there's other themes, like the world is on the verge of change at that moment. And it introduces the idea that Sherlock Holmes and his brother Mycroft, they don't want change, because the world as it is very much suits them. But it introduces this idea that the vote will maybe be extended to women, and, you know, the suffragettes are in the background and all of this. And none of it is heavy-handed. It's all done quite well, and it doesn't get in the way of the adventure. So I thought that was handled quite well.
It's quite nice to see the Sherlock character on the back foot for once, you know, especially after the Benedict Cumberbatch shows, where he's kind of all-knowing. Here, he's kind of one step behind his kid sister. So that's quite refreshing to see.
Yeah, and I thought Henry Cavill was really quite charming in it.
Yeah.
Brought actually more personality to that than he has done quite a few other roles he's done recently, I thought.
I like the fact as well that Sherlock wasn't played with all these sort of tics and, you know, a real sort of oddball. But we've had Benedict Cumberbatch, Johnny Lee Miller in Elementary, who I absolutely love, but he also is, you know, plays him as a bit of a sort of goofy oddball. And in this one, Henry Cavill is quite sort of straight-laced in a way, and he's quite a normal guy. Obviously very intelligent, he's Sherlock, but he hasn't got all of those peculiarities.
Built like a brick, you know what, as well.
Well, yes. I mean, you wouldn't want to meet him in a dark alley, but plenty of things do happen in dark alleys in Limehouse and Cheapside and all the rest of London. Mm. And sort of this idea of London being realised as well. I liked seeing that, her sort of scampering around the back streets of London and the people she encountered there. And this running joke of her trying to buy people's clothes off them in order to disguise herself and never really managing it. It's a bit too long. And it's not quite there. But I think we can all agree it shows great potential for the films that might come after it. Now it's laid the groundwork for this character. Mm. And probably the adventures she'll have after this will be more sophisticated and possibly better.
But the thing is, it's based on Nancy Springer has done the books, and she published 6 books in this kind of young adult series about Enola Holmes. And they were all published between 2006 and 2010. So you've obviously got many more adventures she can have. And like we said, it's setting it up for a franchise, and I'd like to see every sort of year or two the next Enola Holmes adventure on Netflix. That would be great fun.
Yeah. I think I'd be looking forward to that more than the Sherlock Holmes Guy Ritchie one, which I feel a little tired of. Okay, so that is Fresh Holmes, but it's Enola, and it's available on Netflix right now, so go and watch it and see if you can unravel the mystery. Okay, shall we move on to something completely different? It's this.
To where we used to live. I felt like a tourist. I hardly recognize this country anymore. I remember growing up in London, every Vietnamese person that I met lost a family member here.
Yeah, it took a great deal out of us too. Generation forgotten, country divided.
I had no idea that we were leaving. I went to sleep one night, and when I woke up, I was on a boat, drifted for days. My mother passed about a year ago now.
Did your parents ever come back to Vietnam?
Never.
Must be very painful for them not to come back.
So that is Monsoon, which is the story of a Vietnamese-British man, Kit, played by Henry Golding, who returns to Vietnam after 30 years away in London to scatter the ashes of his dead parents. And having left the country at the age of 6 as a sort of refugee under traumatic circumstances, he feels completely disconnected from his culture and his hometown. He's back in Saigon, as they call it locally, Ho Chi Minh City. And he's sort of looking to reconnect with friends he knew when he was a child there, but also to sort of try to seek out his own culture and his parents' culture and to understand who he is. So he's going ahead of this family reunion. He's got a brother with 2 children who's happily married, and he's gone ahead, and he is a young gay man who's quit his job, is sort of untethered, and is sort of bobbing around in the sort of the wind of Vietnam and all the experiences that offers. It's quite a departure, I would say, for Henry Golding, if you're used to seeing him primarily for Crazy Rich Asians and Last Christmas. But if you're used to sort of seeing him as a frothy, sort of rom-commy, heterosexual romantic lead, this is very different for him. It's very quiet, very introspective. He's lost. And it's a lovely thing to see that sort of idea of chasing your identity for sort of second generation people who've been sort of taken from their homes. I mean, he describes this idea that he went to sleep one night and the next thing he knew, he was on a boat drifting at sea and then was rescued and was taken to the UK. And his mother chose to go to the UK simply because she'd seen a picture of the Queen and thought she looked like a nice lady. And so it's so it's this sort of push-pull of this upbringing he's had in the UK. You know, he's this nicely spoken British guy, but he has this background of 6 years in Vietnam that he can't quite recall. And it's that push-pull of those two cultures and who he really identifies as. And whether you should identify as just one or whether it's both or how that all works. And so that sort of idea played out on screen in a very quiet and gentle way. No big drama, no massive moments. Is sort of quite hypnotic and thought-provoking.
So it's a slow burner.
It is a slow burner. And, you know, it made me want to try lotus tea, which I hadn't really considered was real lotus flowers. There's a lovely scene where he goes and helps make lotus tea by picking the leaves off these beautiful flowers. And he says, oh gosh, it smells amazing. It's so sort of evocatively filmed that you can almost smell those flowers in that scene. Yeah. And also it's just really nice as well to see Vietnam portrayed as it is, not sort of in any kind of super romantic classical way, but it's busy, it's warful, teeming with people. Yeah, and you know, there's this thriving community of young people who are interested in art, and they do mixers together, and you can meet guys in nightclubs and take them home and have one night stands, and it's all sort of, it's very modern. But equally hanging over it is this melancholy, because this man that he meets is the son of an American GI who fought in the war. Equally, he feels this great sort of connection to Vietnam that he's not quite sure of either. So this idea of sort of trying to find out who you are and who you will be is very enticing and interesting.
I haven't seen it yet, but it sounds a very different film to Da Five Bloods by Spike Lee. But would you say it would make a good double bill? Because that's all about going back to Vietnam and kind of...
Yeah, and you know, a lot of the time, I think we can all agree, we've seen in the past Vietnam being portrayed through the eyes of white GIs generally. Da Five Bloods showed us a completely different perspective, and so does this. And yes, Kit's family have left Vietnam after sort of political unrest with, you know, post-war, but he's not sort of like the love child of a white GI or any sort of thing like that. It's entirely through the prism of that culture. So yeah, I think both of these are interesting because they're showing people exploring Vietnam and what that culture means to them without it being from the point of view of American soldiers in the war. So yeah, it's interesting, and they would probably make good companion pieces. And again, like Da Five Bloods, you know, there's that great disco scene, isn't there, where they're all like dancing in the disco. It just shows that it's this vibrant place. And so if you're sort of fancying a bit of a holiday, as we all might be right now, it's quite nice to take a little cinematic trip.
Do you think you'll get any awards traction from this? It feels kind of a awardy type film.
I don't think so, but I think it certainly stands him in good stead for moving away from that romantic lead, that sort of blankness that I find with him in Crazy Rich Asians. I mean, he did show that he had potential outside of that with The Gentleman. I think you enjoyed The Gentleman, didn't you, Jamie? Oh yeah, and A Simple Favour, but he's supposed to be sort of a bit of a blank page in that.
Yeah.
He's quite sort of layered and sad and interesting in this, which interesting isn't a word I would use about Henry Golding performances really before this. People are talking about him as the next Bond. With that in mind, you know, it does show that he has greater range than we might have thought.
I'd like to see him as Bond. I think he'd be good. I think he's got the goods. He'd be a good one.
I'd rather have Henry Golding than Tom Hardy, I've got to say.
Well, that's what I would say.
Well, I mean, Tom Hardy just seems not like enough of a step change from Daniel Craig, whereas Henry Golding would be a departure and considerably younger than the Bonds we've been having recently. So let's see. But if you fancy seeing what chops Henry Golding has, have a look at Monsoon, which is out in cinemas and on digital platforms this Friday, the 25th of September. Shall we move on again? Let's get ready, get all your curls ready, get your primping ready, get your dresses ready, ladies. It's this one.
Showtime.
Welcome to the Miss Juneteenth pageant.
I will never get over seeing Miss Juneteenth cleaning toilets.
The winner of Miss Juneteenth will receive a full scholarship to any historically black institution of your choice.
Good luck. I know that you are looking to replicate your success.
What's her problem?
I beat her.
Okay, so this is Miss Juneteenth. Matthew, what is Miss Juneteenth?
Well, this is the feature debut of writer-director Channing Godfrey Peoples, and it centres on the titular contest, which is held in Fort Worth in Texas. Ostensibly, the main character is Turquoise Jones, who's a former winner of this beauty contest. She's kind of a bit down on her luck. She's working in a local bar, And she's very keen for her teenage daughter, Kai, to take part in the competition. There's not a huge amount of narrative here, but the story is essentially about her preparing her daughter, who's rather reluctant to take part in this beauty contest. But there's quite a lot of other layers to it. There's Kai's father, Turquoise's ex, who's kind of feckless, really. And they have a very sort of on and off relationship. And then there's this whole other layer with the whole history of the Miss Juneteenth pageant. Juneteenth is obviously a holiday in the States marking the emancipation of American slaves. There's quite a lot of subtext involved in that. And it's very different from lots of other beauty pageant movies. I mean, you think of things like Drop Dead Gorgeous, Geniality and Carry On Girls. They're very sort of bright and bubbly and a bit over the top. This is very, very different. This is much more of a slow burner. It's not so much about plot. It's much more about character and a sense of place as well. As a debut, I mean, it's incredibly confident. It's a really assured debut. You'd be quite surprised to know that Channing Godfrey Peoples hasn't made a feature-length film before, because she really sustains it. And the two performances are fantastic, particularly Nicole Beharie as Turquoise Jones. So I'm recommending this one.
I agree with Matthew, but it sort of surprised me. Like, I didn't know what to expect. I thought Miss Juneteenth and a couple of pictures I'd seen from the film, I thought it was going to be quite peppy and, you know, that it was going to be a bit of a rom-com or something, and it's not at all. It's kind of, you know, about broken dreams and people trying to get by, and as well as the obvious sort of racial issues that it tackles, there's also, you know, it very much looks at class as well, that, you know, in order to have her daughter in this competition, she needs to provide her with the lovely dress and all the stuff, you know, she's got to look her best, and the family just can't afford it. And there's an absolutely heartbreaking scene where all the girls at the rehearsal, they all turn up in their wonderful frocks and they come out one by one, and then, you know, the main character, the daughter we're following, just steps out in her kind of ripped denim shorts and a t-shirt or something, because they haven't been able to afford her dress. So it's quite a lot going on there, and it's absolutely amazing. It didn't really sort of knock me sideways, but I definitely thought it was a good solid drama, and like Matthew said, for a directorial debut, shows a lot of promise.
Yeah, I thought it was a really good mother-daughter film. I really like the friction and the tension between them. There's no kind of really big sort of showdowns, but you kind of get that push and pull. And you can feel the love between them, even as they're trying to fulfill their different ambitions. I thought it was very successful on that level.
Yeah, it was. And it's the usual thing of a mother really trying to kind of relive her life through her daughter. But her daughter isn't really that interested, I don't think, in the Miss Juneteenth contest. But her mother, it's such a big deal to her that she won it. You know, it's her kind of crowning achievement of her life, no pun intended. Yeah. And she very much wants her daughter to repeat that, to live that success through her. So there's all of that kind of dynamic as well, that the daughter just really doesn't want to do it, but she knows she kind of has to keep mum happy.
Yeah, and that's kind of a familiar story from movies, the parent trying to relive their past through their children. But I thought it was handled with a bit more nuance and subtlety than you usually get, especially in American movies. So I thought that was quite refreshing about this film.
So do we think this is something that might attract awards chat?
Yeah, I think so. I wouldn't be too surprised. I mean, like Jamie says, it is very, very slow and maybe a bit too understated to really reach the wide audience, but I wouldn't be surprised, especially if Peoples, she could pick up a few nominations. Nicole Beharie, wouldn't be surprised to see her on a few shortlists.
Especially as awards might be different this year, and this sort of film might get more of a chance if we don't adhere to the old categories of what qualifies, and we actually do it in the year that we're supposed to. I mean, obviously Oscars and BAFTAs are shifting back, but other awards bodies are sort of keeping to their current schedule, which means that more and more we'll have to be looking outside the usual suspects. So it would be great to see a film like this getting some traction.
I wouldn't be too surprised if Nicole Beharie picks up a nomination, especially if they put her forward as support. They say, right, the teenage daughter's the lead of this film and the mum's the supporting role. I can see her getting a supporting nomination. For me, she was a kind of a standout of the movie.
Yeah.
If she got that, I think it would be deserved. So, yeah, let's hope people do see it and take it into consideration.
Well, you can see it in the cinema, but you can also, if you're not feeling very brave about the cinema, see it on a digital platform. In cinemas and digital platforms from this Friday, the 25th of September, we suggest watching it in a tiara, right?
Yeah.
I did.
You did, Jamie. Marvellous.
I did indeed, yes.
What an image.
I had my best frock on as well. It was lovely.
Okay.
Didn't look as hot as me, I'm sorry.
Well, I never do, Matthew. I've been trying for like 15 years, but...
Keep trying.
Shall we bring in our special guest reviewer for the next one?
Oh, please.
He's actually not in the room at the moment. Shall I go and get him?
Go get him whilst we take a listen to this.
Wouldn't have hurt to have put him on a lead.
So that is 23 Walks, and it's about 23 walks, isn't it, Matthew?
Well, yes, it's centred on two pensioners, Dave and Fern, played by Dave Johns and Alison Steadman. They meet while walking their dogs in a London park over the course of, how many walks is it? 23 walks.
Something like 23.
They start to build a romance. There's a few bumps in the road, as there always is, on the path of true love.
A two-hander and an eight-pawer.
Yes.
Dean, what do you think of this? And what did you think? Yes, I agree. Totally. What about performances?
Wow, you know
that was a very enthusiastic review. And if you would like to see 23 Walks, it's out in cinema this Friday. Thank you, Dean. Stop shouting in the background. We know what you think about the cinematography. So also out this week, and for next week, is an entire franchise. And it's this. That is, of course, a theme tune to one of the Rockies. The Rocky franchise is making its reappearance in cinemas this week. Are they showing the whole set, Matthew?
Yeah, it's the first six films. So Rocky, Rocky 2, Rocky 3, Rocky 4, Rocky 5, and Rocky Balboa. So all the Rocky films, apart from the Creed films, 1 to 6.
Yes.
Back on the big screen, where they belong.
Where they belong. I mean, for anyone who hasn't seen Rocky, why would you go to the cinema to see, you know, a film that is some years old and has had the piss taken out of it numerous times? Why would you see this on the big screen?
Why not? Why would you not see this on the big screen? Well, I mean, the first Rocky, Best Picture winner, I mean, it's the one that cemented Stallone, not just an actor, but a writer as well. I remember he wrote the script. I mean, it's the ultimate underdog story. I mean, the template has been copied many, many, many times. You know, the director, John G. Adelson, even copied it himself with The Karate Kid.
Yeah.
This is the original. It's the story of the Philly slugger, Rocky Balboa. He's kind of a nobody, but then he's given a chance by the reigning heavyweight champion, Apollo Creed, to fight him in the ring, give him a shot at the biggest title in the boxing world. And so Rocky steps up. He's this perfect underdog, and he falls in love along the way with a pet shop worker, Adrian. Adrian, exactly. And then his story continues over the next few films, and there's various dead mentors along the way, various defeats,
house
numerous
robots.
Victories, robots, yeah, montages, training montages, soft rock. And it's just, I mean, some people say it's about boxing, which is kind of a very superficial definition. I mean, these films, I mean, they're life. They're about life, love, heart, everything.
Men,
women, dogs, robots.
Jamie, you love this film, don't you? And all of the films that came after it. What is it about it that really sort of gets you?
Well, first of all, just to say I don't love Rocky V. I don't think anybody loves Rocky V. But what it is, the first film is a genuinely good film. Like Matthew said, it's set a template. It's very sort of low-key, and it's even got a kind of social realism element to it, that he's on the streets, you know, he's training, hitting chunks of meat because, you know, he hasn't got all the high-tech gear and stuff, so he's down near kind of meat market, using that as a punch bag. And then, you know, it's got this Hollywood sort of soap story that he has this shot and he kind of goes all the way that he could become champion of the world. But it is done in a very low key, very real way, and lots of heart. And it's a wonderful film. It actually beat Taxi Driver to Best Picture in 1976, which, you know, I'm not saying it should have done, because Taxi Driver is an absolute masterpiece, but that does kind of show just how good it is. The second one is pretty much a repeat of the first one, but with a different outcome at the end. And then 3 and 4, it starts going to different places. They become very much more kind of 80s Hollywood films, that you start to have sort of super villains, like he goes up against Mr. T, Clubber Lang, in like number 3, and then he goes up against Ivan Drago, the Russian kind of man mountain, played by Dolph Lundgren, in number 4. And then it becomes really about the soft rock music and the jazzy visuals and the sort of unbelievable montages and all of this. They're very different films to the first one. And I'm not saying they're as good a films as the first ones, but I grew up with them. I saw them in my teenage years, as did Matthew, and absolutely loved them. Like, for me, Rocky IV particularly is one of the films of my youth, and a film
it's
that even
snow
now,
montage. Come on.
Oh, it's wonderful.
He's running up that mountain for training in just a sweater. And he's lifting sledges.
You've got the amazing thing that Rocky's doing all of that sort of old-fashioned training, like in nature and hanging from like beams from a bar to do his sit-ups and stuff. And then you've got even Drago is kind of, he has the absolute state-of-the-art technology. Yeah. You know, he's having all the heart monitors and he's strapped to all the machines and on all the latest treadmills and stuff. So you've got that whole thing of like, you know, tech up against sort of just spirit. Like, spirit. I just find it tremendous fun. I wouldn't, you know, hand on heart say it's the greatest film ever made, Rocky IV, but to me it is just so enjoyable and so much fun. And it's still a film I go back to and get huge enjoyment from. Rocky V was a bit of a disaster, and then Rocky VI, like Rocky Balboa, is very good return. And
return to form,
Return to form, and again, lots of heart and sentiment and quite sort of a gut punch as well, but it feels quite real and quite melancholy.
I only really liked Stallone's performance in Rocky Balboa. I was a bit disappointed. I think he gives a great performance, you know, this kind of melancholy, aging widower. But I felt like Creed was the true Rocky Balboa, if you know what I mean. That really felt like that was the later years sequel that absolutely nailed it, Creed and Creed 2.
But, you know, lots of people will have seen the Creed movies on a big screen, but perhaps not seen any of these on a big screen, because it's been some time since you've been able to see them in the cinema. Rocky is a movie that's designed to be seen as a community of, you know, people all feeling great about his, is he going to get through this final round in the ring? You know, is he going to beat Clubber Lang? I imagine it would be a good night out if you went to the cinema.
Oh, yeah.
You always get that climactic last 15 minutes where he's in the ring slugging it out, and the rounds get faster and faster, and the kind of the women are going past with their placards like round 5, round 6, and the music's getting louder and louder. And by the end of it, the whole audience will be on their feet punching the air. Just fantastic.
Yeah, go there with your little sippy bottle that you have to have as a boxer and a towel around your neck. Okay.
Gum shield.
So, Matthew, when can we see these cinematic treats on the big screen?
Well, just for 1 week only, from Friday at selected cinemas across the UK. So hurry, go now, book your tickets, get out there.
Essentially, you have to watch all 6. So if they're out for a week, you better get going.
One a night. Sorted.
What a marathon.
It is a knockout.
I just want to say one thing to my wife who's home. Yo, Adrian!
Before we go, let's answer a reader's question, shall we? And it's in keeping with our Rocky chat. What is your favourite movie fight? And what movie characters would you like to see square up to each other? Matthew.
Well, yeah, it has to be the final battle between Rocky Balboa and Ivan Drago at the end of Rocky IV. 15 rounds of sheer mayhem, drama.
And a lot of glistening flesh.
It's the shiniest fight you'll ever see.
Yeah.
Absolute whiplash montage.
Yeah.
Yeah, perfection.
Are there any characters you'd like to see have a fight? A
couple of the Star Wars characters. I wouldn't mind seeing Wicket the Ewok go up against Darth Vader. That'd be quite fun. So we never got to see that. That was the only letdown from the original Star Wars trilogy. I'd like to see him, Wicket, get his spear into Vader. Be happy about that.
I'm going to go for the fight between Roddy Piper and Keith David in They Live. Which was a John Carpenter film, like in, I think it was 87, 88, late 80s. And Roddy Piper was, of course, his day job was he was a wrestler, so it's what he does for a living. A carpenter just very much said to them, you guys just go at it, do your own thing. Carpenter didn't choreograph it or anything. He let Roddy Piper take charge. And this fight is fantastic because it just goes on and on and on. It lasts for about 5 minutes of screen time of them just slugging it out and chucking each other on the ground. And just by the end of it, every bone in their bodies should be broken. It just never ends. But it's just so much fun and so impactful. And and I like the movie as well. So I'll go for that one.
Movie characters you'd like to see fighting?
I would like to see Godzilla against R2-D2.
I don't know that's going to work, Jamie.
I could see it. It may only last about 0.1 seconds.
Yeah, it'll probably end with a stamp, won't it? Poor old C-3PO will be in there gathering the bits, putting him back together.
There you go. That's the next 10 minutes of a film. He puts him back together and gets a message out of him.
Yeah, fine. That's pure spirit of Rocky, isn't it?
Yeah.
Keep going.
My favourite movie fight, I really enjoy a fight in a bathroom. There's a couple of examples that have been really good. And actually two of them involve Henry Cavill. One is in The Man from U.N.C.L.E. where he goes up against Armie Hammer and they smash the living shit out of, is it German toilet cubicles? And then obviously the one where he and Tom Cruise have a little fight in Mission Impossible Fallout. Again, I think there's something really sort of impactful about somebody getting their head mashed against porcelain. Yeah. But really, my favourite movie fight is the one between Colin Firth and Hugh Grant in Bridget Jones's Diary, which even to this day, even though they repeated it in the second film, is still so brilliant because it's so inept and it's just exactly how people do fight. And this sort of flapping and pushing and sort of kicking very poorly. And I love the fact that it's just sort of this grappling, this feeble grappling in the street, which is exactly how it would be. So I love that one. And characters I'd like to see fight. I'd like to see Furiosa go up against Lara Croft.
Mm.
Angelina Jolie is cracking at action and Charlize Theron is absolutely cracking at action. So I'd like to see those two ladies go at it because I think they'd be inventive and mean. Mm. And it would be very entertaining. So that's my pick. Okay, so we'll be back next week with more. And who knows whether it'll be cinematic or all streaming next week, because who knows what governments will announce. But in the meantime, do enjoy your cinematic things this week. And what is your pick of this week, Matthew?
Aside from the Rocky franchise, Miss Juneteenth.
Miss Juneteenth. And Jamie?
I haven't seen Monsoon yet. I need to watch that this week, but I would go Enola Holmes just because, you know, it's good fun and it's on Netflix, easy to watch. Just put it on. You have a good evening.
Yeah, I agree. I think Enola Holmes is a crowd pleaser, but don't think you can go too far wrong with that. Okay, so for now, let's say goodbye. And bye to Gene.
He's gone.
Well, he's probably in a screening, isn't he?
Well, yeah, I mean, he watches more films than I do, actually. So to be honest with you, when I watch a film and there's any animal on that film, be it a squirrel, a dog, a cat, anything, he goes absolutely mental. So what you just heard, I get virtually every film I watch at some point.
Oh, my goodness.
Because he does actually watch the TV and wait for them to appear.
How restful. Okay, so on that note, it's goodbye from them.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
And it's goodbye from me.